welcome to the Perfect Formula from V2 Sport. My name's Tegan, and I'm joined with Anthony, who you should have heard on the football podcast. We're going to be discussing the Formula One season. We've had two races so far.
Hello, good evening. We'll start the show tonight by discussing the first race of the season, the Australian Grand Prix.
Probably not too much to say about it, as it wasn't the most exciting race in the world.
Not many overtakes, no.
No, I think Ricciardo was the only major overtake that I recall, but yeah, not that exciting. I guess it was lucky in a way that Haas had their issues, because it was about the only drama we saw.
Yeah, it was certainly lucky for Ferrari anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Vettel very lucky with the safety car. There's been a lot of talk about the rules and arguments about whether it was fair or not, but yeah, he was lucky. I guess all he can do is play to the rules. It was smart of Ferrari to leave him out. Well, lucky as well, but yeah, a lucky win. And I think, you know, come the end of the season, that could be a crucial point for him over Hamilton.
Yeah, it's a bit early so far to be saying, but he's in a strong position to start the season with. Which has got to be a good morale boost for him, and we all know that Hamilton doesn't really work that well under pressure in terms of championships. He tends to lose it a bit the further away his points get. But no, it is a lucky break for Ferrari, not quite so lucky for Haas. I mean, new team for the pit stop, it's not going to be very good confidence for them for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, of course, both drivers went out in the race. Two errors. I mean, you see errors from time to time, but it's rare you see both drivers going out
different
with tyre
issues.
Different mechanics. It's just unfortunate for them because they were in such a strong position. You know, you were looking at two drivers in the top six, which for Haas, and you know, in general, they've got a very good package, and very unfortunate for them, I think.
Certainly frustrating for the drivers to start off their season in such a bad way as well. It's not going to be good for them looking back on it, and there's going to be a certain anxiety every time there's a pit stop from now on. So yeah, that's certainly a thing to work about. They have worked out a different procedure now. They've got an additional person manning the stop button so that they can override it if needs be, but hopefully that won't be needed.
I think it's a good system, actually, because there's a lot of people who talk about having the lollipop man back, you know, which you had in previous years, but I think pit stops would be too slow with that, and I think it's quite a good compromise system they've kind of found.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the lollipop man was always quite iconic anyway. Seeing that lollipop turn around as quickly as possible was quite interesting, especially when there was troubles. Seeing that lollipop staying red was always quite interesting to watch.
I think the problem with it though is, you know, you'd lose a good second at pit stop, and the only way the FIA would have to enforce it, or, you know, you can't have a situation where half the teams have it and half of them don't, for me.
Well, yeah, no, I do believe it is something that's out of date. It's just one of those things that's a bit nostalgic to have. And maybe if they continue having problems with pit lanes throughout this season, they might bring it in for a short period of time whilst they're getting the electronics sorted out. Because we have had two incidents now of pit stop errors. I mean, well, three incidents, really, two races. Which is quite surprising, actually, for the start of a season to start off with three pit stop errors in two races. That's not a good track record, really.
Yeah, but going back to the Haas and looking at the drivers themselves, I thought when you look at what Romain Grosjean did and went and, you know, hugged the mechanic and sort of, it would have been quite easy for him to storm off, and no one would have blamed him if he'd have reacted in an angry way. But he sort of showed it in the past, but he showed again he's sort of the nice guy of F1.
Certainly, his reaction was certainly better than Raikkonen's. I mean, considering the fact that one of Raikkonen's mechanics was actually injured, there is pictures of him throwing water bottles across the inside of the pit lane, which isn't the best reaction, considering, especially when you look back on last race, when you have Grosjean going around and comforting the pit lane members. Certainly when they're a brand new team, it's going to help them to know that they've got the drivers on their side. Perhaps this is going to cause some problems with Ferrari, you know, it's not the best thing to have part of the team segregated in the terms that the driver didn't show much humility or sympathy for the mechanic that was injured. Mm. And it was a serious concern at the time. They weren't sure how damaged, you know, his leg was or if anywhere else was injured. And as such, you know, you would expect a bit more sympathy in the pit lane itself.
Yeah, but then, I don't know, it's hard to judge. I think Raikkonen, because of the way he comes... Well, I guess all we can judge him on, we don't know him personally, but the way he comes across in media interviews and stuff, he seems quite a distant figure. You know, he's quite a popular figure, and he comes out with some funny things, but is he actually a bit of a, you know, not a very nice person, not a bit of a knob, yeah, to put it bluntly? I don't know. You know, we don't know him personally, and maybe he is, I don't know.
Yeah, no, his reaction certainly wasn't very endearing. That's the truth. And whether Ferrari are going to have to do some PR to try and rectify that problem, that's something we'll have to see. I mean, Vettel certainly did try to when he was on the podium. You know, he went to wish the mechanic well and everything that you'd expect a driver to do in those circumstances. But are Ferrari going to have a PR problem on their hands? Are they going to need to get Raikkonen to go out into the public and try and smooth things over? Which, let's face it, Raikkonen isn't really great with unless it's the Chinese public, in which case everything's fine.
But with Raikkonen, as you say, whether Ferrari have a PR problem or not with him, I think is irrelevant because, you know, if Ferrari aren't happy with him, and there's a decent chance, even if they are happy, that end of the season he'll be gone. You know, he's there's a lot of young drivers out there who want that Ferrari.
Well, there's certainly the argument, the fact that he's not as young as he used to be. And as such, your reactions always slow down as you get older. That is an irrefutable truth of life. And there are a lot of promising young drivers out there. I mean, they're putting drivers out into the lower teams.
Leclerc at
Sauber. To feel them out and everything. And obviously they've got the drivers in Haas that are doing quite well at the moment. Whether they're going to think of trying to bring them in as backup to Vettel, because that's really what their only role would be. They're there to back up and support Vettel and make sure that he is able to win races. You know, it's not a massively important job in terms of driving ability. You need to be able to drive fast, but you need to be defensive as well. And a driver at one of those lower teams isn't going to know how to drive defensively much better than someone that's at a higher team, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. They're more used to being in a defensive position. And as such, they need to find someone that has the right temperament as well as those abilities. Mm. And, you know, does Raikkonen still have those abilities? He doesn't build up places anymore. He's only built one place since one place in Australia, and that was it. Once he lost his place to Bottas, he lost it.
Mm. The thing what's kind of sad is I think the first two races of this season, Raikkonen's been... he's done a lot better, and he's been competing with Vettel. Obviously, he was ahead of him before the safety car incident in Australia, and then in Bahrain in the second race, he was up there. He was, you know, he was in the top four, and he was obviously behind Vettel, but he qualified second, and he was definitely in with a shout. And I think, you know, I hope it doesn't just tail off and he ends up being nowhere all season like he was for the majority of last season. You know, apart from as I recall Monaco and perhaps one or two other races, I don't recall him doing a hell of a lot last season, which is disappointing.
Well, he has been beating Vettel's times in practice laps and also in qualifying in stages, which shows that perhaps he has got some fight left in him. Is he going to start ignoring team orders? Probably not. And as such, he's probably not going to win any races because he's always going to be there as backup for Vettel. Whether that's something that he's going to be able to cope with the fact that he is doing faster at certain times, that's something to consider as well. I mean, he did used to win races. He did used to be the top dog, as it were. And whether his pride will be able to take the fact that even if he's going faster than Vettel, he's still going to be backup and only backup. He may rankle a bit with that.
I guess that's the two sort of contrasting strategies. I mean, you look at the Ferrari system, and that's always been their system where, well, even when it wasn't legal with the Massa incident, when Fernando is faster than you, they've always had that clear number one and number two, whereas at Mercedes, while Hamilton is clearly the better driver, they at least try to make it seem like they've got a level playing field. And Hamilton himself, to his credit, seems quite keen to ensure that there's no preferential treatment towards him. You know, it's two different systems. I'm sure as the season goes on, you know, drivers will lose or gain points because of it. And, you know, I think that's a discussion I'm sure we'll be having in a later podcast.
Yeah, there's always the fact that obviously a few seasons ago we had Rosberg and Hamilton both in the same team, and they were both allowed to race as they wanted, even when they were both racing towards the championship. There was no preferential treatment between the two of them. They were both racing against each other for those points, and they were allowed to do so. I mean, it caused a bit of worry for the cars. There was times where things got a bit sketchy. But Mercedes does seem to be good at managing that. And I think it's probably a better strategy in total. I mean, Bottas is there as support if Hamilton's in the front. But if Hamilton hasn't got a chance of winning, they will always try and put Bottas in the front. They're concerned more about the points for the team as a whole rather than the points for the individual. I mean, the points for the individual, you know, they're brilliant, amazing, good. But the points for the team is always the better situation. And I think at the moment, Bottas just isn't doing that. I mean, he certainly had the chance to overtake Vettel. He had the better tyres and he had, you know, essentially the faster car probably. I mean, it's in hot heat, so whether that was an issue, but he'd certainly had the point where he caught Vettel, and if he was Hamilton, he would have overtaken him. And whether that means that his future with Mercedes isn't very bright, you know, we can't tell.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's not only if it was Hamilton, I think if it was Vettel himself, if it was Alonso, if it was one of the Red Bull drivers,
anyone
with
a bit more fire.
Yeah, and that's the question mark, you know, can he really deliver and do them big overtakes when it matters? And he's under pressure, his contract's up at the end of the season, and, you know, similarly to Raikkonen, and if he's not delivering, then Mercedes won't hesitate in getting rid, because they've got five other drivers at least who would want that drive.
Well, he needs to prove he's got the fire in him, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Mercedes isn't interested in a driver that's meek. If they wanted a driver that was meek and not all that aggressive, they could have had Jenson Button. To be perfectly honest with you, he's a good driver. He's not the most aggressive. And it's the same for Bottas. He's a good driver, but he's not aggressive. He hasn't got that fire. He hasn't got that fight. And it showed in those final few laps of the Bahrain race that he didn't have the fire to go at Vettel. I mean, if it was Alonso, he would have gone at him. And that's the difference. Alonso doesn't have a good car, but he still goes at people. whether it succeeds because of the car or not, that's a different matter. But Bottas just doesn't have the fire.
Well, that was the point that was made after the race, was that even he didn't even attempt the overtake. If he'd have attempted the overtake...
And chickened out.
If he'd have attempted the overtake and it didn't work, then you can say, fair enough, he's had a go, he's tried, it's not come off this time, you know, hard luck. But the fact he's bottled it, he's chickened out, he needs to buck up his ideas or he won't be in a Mercedes next season.
Especially when he was standing on that podium. I mean, if Hamilton was in that same position or Bottas, well, if Alonso was in the same position or Vettel was in the same position where his contract was on the line and he knew he screwed up in that race, he wouldn't stand there looking worried and like a small child that's about to be scolded. He would be furious with himself, to put it bluntly. They would be furious, and you would see the fire on their face. Because you can see them beating themselves up when they don't get the performance that they expect or that they want, because they have higher expectations for themselves, and they hold themselves to those expectations. And Bottas looked defeated, to be perfectly honest with you. He looked like he had given up on that podium. And it doesn't hold very good promises for the next race, to be perfectly honest. I don't think we're going to see much of a bucking up from him unless he has a strong talking to from a team leader, and whether he'll be able to cope with that, that's the difference.
And obviously in the first race, he crashed out in qualifying, and he was only able to get up to eighth. But you know, you look forward, and Hamilton, he's not exactly young. I mean, once Hamilton, you know, if he's, he's not the sort of guy I can see sticking around into F1, into you know, like an Alonso or, you know, Schumacher or so. I can't see him being there in his late 30s. I think he's got a lot of other things he wants to do. But the point I want to make is that Mercedes will need that team leader. You know, Vettel's going to be around longer than Hamilton is, and if Mercedes want to challenge Ferrari, they need that big...
Well, the difference between Hamilton and Vettel is that Vettel does have an input on the how the car is made up, much like Schumacher did, actually. He understands the engineering and he understands how things work, and as such, he's able to give an input to them, and that extends his lifespan as a driver. I mean, even when his reflexes slow down and stuff, he's still going to be wanted in the team, whether maybe not as a primary role, but still as a role which has wisdom and experience under their belt. Hamilton doesn't have that ability. I mean, he's certainly got his own way of doing things, and he has his own, you know, so he's got his own clothing range and stuff. And so he's not really needing F1 as money. He's doing it at the moment because he enjoys doing the driving. The moment that enjoyment stops, so the moment he stops winning races, then he probably won't be interested any further. Now, in terms of young drivers coming up, we've got Verstappen. He is incredibly unreliable, to put it bluntly. He's a bit hot-headed and, as such, makes stupid mistakes, like crashing out in the qualifying in Bahrain and crashing out in the first race because he got a bit annoyed. So, yeah, he's not most reliable, but maybe if he has a bit more experience under his belt, he may be a good one for the future.
It was such a stupid incident that Hamilton was criticised for calling him a dickhead after the race. There was one reporter in particular I saw who was quite harsh in his questioning to Hamilton, but... I think Hamilton was within his rights. I think he's over eager almost, and I thought it last season. He's trying too hard.
He's too young.
And you know, in the first race as well, the Australian Grand Prix, he was very skittish. He blamed the car after, but I think it was the driver. I think he was all over the place.
Well, as I said while I was still watching that race, actually, you could tell he was annoyed by the fact that he was behind Magnussen. He was furious with the fact that he was behind a lower driver. And that's what caused him to make that stupid mistake, which caused him to crash out in the end. And he's going to continue wrecking cars when he gets annoyed, because he's essentially having a temper tantrum behind the wheel. I mean, you don't want that in a Formula One driver, especially not in such an expensive car. And as such, he needs to buck up his ideas if he wants to stay in a big team. We've seen it before where good drivers that are hot-headed and keep wrecking cars or causing damage or possibly even causing crashes with other drivers, they get chucked out of the bigger team, so they get more experience in a lower one. Because at the end of the day, they're too hot-headed and they're a danger. And, you know, Formula One teams don't want that. They're not going to win podiums, or they will win podiums, but very rarely, because, you know, chances are they won't finish a race.
Mm. It hasn't been a good start to the season in general for Red Bull with Ricciardo not finishing the race. He had an engine problem from the looks of things. The thing is, with Verstappen, you look at the Toro Rosso, they have a driver finishing fourth place with Pierre Gasly, an incredible drive from both the individual and for Toro Rosso, who were looking nowhere. And, you know, a bit lucky with a few retirements, etc. But still a fourth place for him not to be sniffed at. And, you know, it's quite an important team, Toro Rosso, because, you know, Verstappen used to be there, Ricciardo used to be there, and obviously Vettel. And, you know, you drive well for them and you will get an opportunity in the Red Bull. So, you know.
I mean, part of the argument... I'd be interested to see how Gasly does in the next race. I mean, part of the argument would be the fact that he's won there before in Formula 2. So he knows that track. He knows it pretty well. So is he going to not do quite as well on tracks he doesn't know? That would be what I'd be interested in looking at, because he is a new driver to Formula 1. So he's not quite used to the power of the Formula 1 car yet. You know, he's been in Formula 2, but it is a different matter. And it does seem like Toro Rosso actually have a good car at the moment. It's certainly doing better than the McLaren is. It's doing better than the Haas, but the Haas team's doing quite well, actually, itself. So it's a bit surprising. We've got a few underdogs. coming up.
It looked pretty, just to make the comparison, because Toro Rosso took the Honda engine, which McLaren struggled with for a couple of years. They finished fourth in what's effectively McLaren's home race. You know, it doesn't look good for them when, you know, they complain about the Honda engine for a couple of seasons and then Toro Rosso go out and get a fourth. But having said that, McLaren have made a decent start to the season. They sit third place in the constructors behind the Mercedes and the Ferrari. And Fernando Alonso has been absolutely incredible the first two races for me.
Yeah, I mean, the argument for that would be that, you know, whilst the Honda engine is now with Toro Rosso, you could say that if McLaren had stayed with that Honda engine for another year and Toro Rosso still had the McLaren engine as well, and it wasn't performing as well, people would be scratching their heads going, why on earth has McLaren stayed with Honda? They know it's not working. So they had to do something different. I mean, they couldn't believe the promises of Honda anymore, because Honda had been promising for so many seasons that their engines would improve, and they didn't see any sign of it. I mean, I understand that their chassis isn't great at the moment. It's not getting as much speed as other cars with the same engine are doing at the moment, but that's things they can work on. The engine, they can't really control.
Well, Alonso's response when he got asked the question about this issue, the Honda engine, he said it's easy to base this off one race. I hope you ask me this question after all 21 races, and we'll see if I finish ahead of the Toro Rossos. So, yeah, pretty much what you've said, and you are right that that Gasly does know the track well. I saw in every session he was in the top 10 in all the practice, all the qualifying. He was consistently very good. So you're right, it could be that he's just particularly good at Bahrain. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where McLaren are. I think they're not... people are suggesting they could win races. I don't see that. I could possibly see a podium in a race where there's a few retirements. I can't see them finishing ahead of Red Bull or... the Ferrari or the Mercedes, possibly mixing it with the Red Bull if it's a track that suits them.
I mean, we've not really seen the Red Bull's full capacity this season yet, so we can't really vote them out, rule them out, as it were, because we've not seen them perform to their optimum. I mean, they didn't finish in the last race. So we can't say how they'd cope in the heat. We do know that from the previous season they do have a bit of problem with the fumes as well, with being close to other cars. And is Ferrari's over exhaustion fumes going to cause problems with that? If they're following a Ferrari, aren't they going to have to slow down significantly to try and get some clean air? Because the Ferraris are kicking up a lot of fuel at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Just to finish, I want to talk about the Vettel and Hamilton rivalry, which we've seen a few bits and pieces in interviews. What do you think of it?
I don't think it's as strong as they try and make out. I think they both enjoy the pageantry of this rivalry. But I think both of them now, whilst they may have had that when they were younger, both of them now are old enough and mature enough, really, to not quite see it so arrogantly and so heatedly. I think they're very calculating in their, you know, supposed enmity of each other. But I think really what it is they enjoy the competition between the two of them. They know that they're the two best drivers out there at the moment, and they've got the two best cars. So they are enjoying the competition, and as such, they'll play up to the media. But I don't think there's any real hatred out there. Last season was a bit touch and go with Vettel's reaction to Hamilton at times. But I think Vettel may have learned from that, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. And I think they both do come across as decent characters. And, you know, the media does like to create... I guess it's what sells a media story to say, oh, Vettel, you wouldn't believe what Vettel said about Hamilton. He was... whatever, and it, you know, you want that big rivalry. But then, yeah, having said that, it's more respectful this season. When Vettel defended Hamilton for calling Verstappen a dickhead, for instance, and he said in one interview, he said it's okay, you know, the joking's okay, you know, it's all good fun, and he said that was important. But yeah, he also said, which I thought was quite interesting, the only time he was angry with Hamilton was after that safety car incident, because he genuinely believed that Hamilton had brake tested him. And he said that's the only time he's felt truly angry with him, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think most of their rivalry is a supposed one. They know that the media likes to make it up, and they like to play up to it, I think. But in terms of things, yeah, I don't think there's any real true hatred between the two of them. Maybe if they're in the same team, then you'd have problems, because you've got two big egos trying to bash against each other then. But as it is, with both of them knowing that they're each the front runners and they're both a lot more experienced than they used to be, there is a certain level of respect and perhaps even camaraderie between the two of them, because the fact that they're fighting for the same thing and they're trying to do it the best way that they can, and they don't want to do it, you know, dishonestly, because they want to do it from their own skill set rather than using tricks and bad sportsmanship. They want to fight against each other with the cars as honestly as they can. So there's got to be a level of mutual respect there, and I don't think there's a hatred as strong as what the media tries to portray.
I think what's interesting as well is, I think, yeah, Hamilton has a lot more respect for him than he did for Rosberg. I don't think Hamilton considered, he kind of considers Vettel as equal. He didn't really consider that with Rosberg. I think he himself considers Vettel and Alonso both similar skilled drivers, which I think, but yeah.
Is that to do with the fact that Rosberg was never really in it for the love of the sport, though? I mean, Vettel and Hamilton both love the sport. And Rosberg, he was really there to, almost make his father proud. I mean, he got the championship and then he left. He wasn't interested past that. And I think that shows that he wasn't really in love with the sport as Hamilton and Vettel and Alonso and all the bigger names are, because they love that sport. I mean, Alonso, if he didn't love that sport, he would have left years ago. I mean, McLaren isn't doing it for him, let's face it. And if he wasn't in love with the sport, he would have left.
I think he loves it even more now. He's in that midfield and he's doing lots of...
He gets a challenge.
It's a challenge, yeah. It's not like if... I think, you know, if he was in, say, the Mercedes instead of Hamilton, I think he'd have been bored. I think he prefers doing this because... Yeah. You can see what an excellent driver he is even more.
I think he likes also trying to help with the progression of that car. He likes trying to have an input with it. And he also enjoys it when he gets someone like Hamilton stuck behind him in his less than fast car. And he likes to annoy them with his defensive manoeuvres. And I think he gets a sadistic enjoyment out of that, perhaps. Mm. He certainly enjoyed it when Hamilton was behind him and he couldn't get past. Well, that was in last season. Anyway, this season he was a bit preoccupied with overtaking someone else at the same time. And I don't think he really expected Hamilton to overtake him and two others at the same time as well.
Well, as long as we get some more funny team radio from Alonso this season, I'll be happy, because there was some delights in there last year, or, you know, something like the deck chair moment when his car crashed, when he crashed out. But yeah, is there anything else you want to mention or anything? Or
could be only that Alonso is like the king of cool, chill sarcasm at the moment, I think, on the team radios. I think we should have a competition for that throughout the season. So we'll have a team radio sarcasm meter, and we'll give you the top three for each race.
All right, well, that's the end of our first show. We'll be back after the Chinese Grand Prix. I hope you enjoy it. You can follow us on Twitter at The Perfect F1. Thanks for listening, and good night.
Good night.